go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I am Ben Bolin.
Hey, Ben. We got a pretty good topic today. We've got this is something that a couple of listeners have written in over the years, really.
Yes.
And mentioned that, you know, they'd like to hear a something about this topic. We're talking about the Nürburgring.
Mm-hmm.
And most recently, I guess, it would be Regina Oliver, who is a Facebook fan.
Yes.
She'd mentioned that she'd like to hear something about this. But we've also had some other listeners like Matt LeBlanc,
mm-hmm.
Not that Matt LeBlanc, I don't think, but
right, as he's
not,
said
not the actor, but yeah, there's a little anecdote I want to add in here somewhere about Matt's experience on the Nürburgring.
Oh, we should open with it.
You want to?
Yeah.
All right, sure. All right, so this is a listener that we had for, you know, well, hopefully still around. I think he's out there.
Yeah.
He said that, you know, in passing, he mentioned, I'm going to be headed over to Germany. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was for a work program, really. And,
yes.
You know, he had participated in the 24 Hours of Lemons. And so there was this long back and forth between us. And he said he's going to be going to Germany, might give the rental car a shot on the Nürburgring,
mm-hmm.
which is forbidden. And he knew it, though. I think he knew that that was going to happen. But what happened was, and he actually sent us a photo of this, he took his rental car on the Nürburgring, you know, for one of the tourist days, I guess, you know, when you could, or one of the days when you're allowed to, you know, drive all out.
Which we'll get into.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get into this. But taking a rental car there, you know, because of insurance purposes, that's a no-no.
Yeah.
And they have devices that record, you know, they record everything that happens, every vehicle that enters the track and leaves the track.
Mm-hmm.
And the rental car company tracked him down, sent him a note and said, you're forbidden from renting from this company ever again. And he's got a nice photo of that note that he sent along to us. So, Matt, once again, I think we've mentioned that before, but we appreciate you sending that. That was good.
Yeah, that made our day. And that's a excellent problem as far as illustrating the Nürburgring, which is one of the most unique compounds, courses, tracks.
I guess. I mean, they call it a motorsports complex, and
right.
That's the reason is because there's more than one track.
Yes.
There's the Grand Prix circuit, which, mm-hmm. you know, this all used to be one thing at one point. We'll talk about that, too. But, you
right.
know, there's a newer Formula One track,
mm-hmm.
and then there's this giant ring. That's why they call it the ring, of course.
Right, the North Loop and the South Loop.
Exactly, and it's called the race on now. I'll give this a shot, Ben. I'll give it the first shot.
Go for it.
Nordschleife.
Which is just the North Loop.
It means the North Loop, yeah. So this North Loop is what we tend to think of when we think about the Nürburgring, really.
Mm-hmm. So if you go today and you are driving on this course, you're going to be going over the 22.81-ish kilometers mm-hmm. of the North Loop. It is huge.
Yeah, over 14 miles.
Exactly. This ring is so big. This track is so wide that there are villages within the perimeter. There are people inside the perimeter of this thing.
Well, there's a castle in there.
Yes, there's a castle.
Yeah, a whole village. I mean, we're talking about retail shops, restaurants, everything,
mm-hmm.
hotels. This is a monster track. It's enormous. It led, you know, it's a beautiful track.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out later that Jackie Stewart, he called it the Green Hell.
Yes.
And that's a name that's stuck, you know, for years and years mm-hmm. and years. And I love the history of this track.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, I think, you know, quick before we go, we may have already, like, kind of blown some people's minds that you can drive on the Nürburgring.
Oh, yeah, spoiler alert, you guys.
Yeah, it's actually a toll road at this point.
Yeah, it's legally in Germany, this is a one-way public toll road, and for the reasonable price, I think for one lap, it's around, what, 26 euro?
Exactly right, and I looked that up this morning to find out how much that that is exactly in U.S. dollars. About 34 bucks.
And the price goes down if you buy more laps in a package.
Yeah, you can buy multiple laps. So it's kind of like buying a pass to go on this toll road as many times as you want. You can do, three laps. It goes on up until, I don't know if there's an unlimited lap pass or not. I'm just not sure, but you can even buy something called a ring card,
mm-hmm.
and then you can use your ring card as credit, you know, towards driving on the road. You can use it at the shops, at the restaurants within the ring.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting setup they've got there.
And what we're going to do over the course of this podcast is tell you a little bit about the history of this, the history of this complex, the location of the Nürburgring and the, the Nürburgring, mm-hmm. because the Nürburgring is the castle.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And, we're going to tell you about some of the great moments. We're going to tell you, ultimately why we think you should go and why we think we should go too.
Definitely. And you know, this thing, the Nürburgring makes it into the news quite a lot recently. Mm-hmm. And that's because, manufacturers take their vehicles to the ring to do testing and they have kind of a timed shootout.
Yeah.
And I definitely want to get to that. We'll talk
about
that
later.
We'll get
to that. Yeah.
Okay. So let's start, I guess at the beginning, right?
Okay. 1920s, 1925, they lay the foundation stone mm-hmm. for the track. Now, what's interesting about this, you're going to hear some different explanations, but one thing that comes up often is that this track began as a means of alleviating some unemployment there. Now, it was about, I think an investment of more than 14 million Reichsmarks.
Whoa.
At the time. So again, that's 1925.
1925. That's a hefty bill.
Yes. And, it worked. They had thousands of people employed and they originally built the North Loop and the South Loop, for a combined, 28.26. ish
yep.
kilometers.
Which is 17 and a half miles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mentioned that the North Loop is 14 miles. So, mm-hmm. you know, these are broken up into segments. The Southern Loop is only about 4.8 miles. And, then there's another one. There's a warm up loop also, which is about 1.4 miles. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's all these different segments that you can drive.
Yes. And as we said earlier, for a fee, anyone can drive on this.
Exactly, yeah. So let's get back to the track. The track itself, because, you know, it wasn't completed until 1927. So it's like a 2-year construction project. That's a long
yeah.
time considering the amount of people and the amount mm-hmm. of money that was thrown at this project.
And, it's not by any means a straightaway or a simple loop.
No. Did you read how many turns there are in this thing?
Oh man, people don't even agree on it. There's more than 100.
Well, you know, it's
all around.
It's
like
it
170
went,
something.
It was 174 originally.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was pared down from that amount in the late 1960s, early 1970s. And we'll get to that real quick here because, you know, prior to 1971, again, 174 turns, or they called them bends.
Yes.
But, some of those, you know, the varying degrees of difficulty, high speed turns, slow speed turns.
There's a hairpin.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's a lot going on in this track. It's enormous, but it's a very challenging track. And of course, it was used for, you know, early days of competition. It wasn't really used for Grand Prix competition until about 1939.
Right. The first race is in June of 1927, the first actual race they have.
Yeah.
And that's like right after they built it, the same year the track was completed. But as you're saying, they didn't really get to the Grand Prix, and there were several, mm-hmm. Until later on.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it wasn't until, you know, let's fast forward a bit.
Okay.
You know, things are going fine. It's a track that's exceedingly fast. And, you know, we've talked about Formula One and just how ridiculously fast these things got in the 1960s, 1970s.
Yeah.
You know, these are drivers like, Juan Fangio and Sterling Moss and Jim mm-hmm. Clark and Jackie Stewart.
Caracola.
Exactly. Those guys are driving, I mean, cars right to the very limit, and their cars are dangerous because, you know, it was the 1960s and the safety standards weren't quite what they are now.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned this at length in the Can-Am podcast that we did.
Yeah.
But Formula One was similar in that, you know, it was getting dangerous because they were so, so fast. This is where Jackie Stewart called it the Green Hell, because it was a beautiful track mm-hmm. to drive, but exceedingly dangerous because of the turns. You know, you're coming off of long stretches. I mean, you're talking about like 2.5 mile stretch that's a straight, flat out, you know, top speed run mm-hmm. followed by, you know, a hard turn at the end.
Yes. And memory is key. When they talk about learning this course, it's not an exaggeration. You have to know exactly when and how to run this thing. And we're going to talk a little bit about how there's a little bit of danger there. It's fairly safe to say the Nürburgring wouldn't be built today.
No, definitely not. And, you know, Ben, a lot of people compare this to, you know, there's all kinds of conditions. We mentioned the high-speed turns, low-speed
yep.
turns.
Yep.
driving a mountain road is another one that they say.
Oh, and the famous Eiffel region weather.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. It's always a little bit cooler and a little misty and, you know, kind of dangerous at that, you know, in that way. But, there were a lot of places, especially prior to 1971 when they made these changes. And I want to talk about that in a second, but, a lot of places where a car would leave the track. And I mean leave the track in flight.
Mm-hmm.
It would, you know, a lot of dips, like the road would suddenly drop off that, you know, it wasn't a problem really up until, let's say, the late 1960s when the cars are getting up to speeds that are just remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, you know, cars are jumping. And, you know, the photo that I have on my desk right now.
Yeah.
On my desk,
on my cubicle wall.
Yeah, exactly. There's a photo of a BMW mid-flight, you know, and I think that was taken here at the Nürburgring. Anyways, they decided that all these drivers got together, and they were led by Jackie Stewart, you know, for Formula One, and he said that, you know, things are just getting too dangerous here. We've had too many accidents.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things are going wrong here. This track has to be fixed. Otherwise, we're not coming back. We're going to boycott this race.
And a couple side notes on Jackie Stewart, or excuse me, Sir Jackie Stewart.
Oh, right? Yes, that's right.
At the time when he named this track the Green Hell, F1 drivers had a 66% chance of dying in a crash if they raced for 5 years.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, a 66% chance.
Yeah, it's approximate two-thirds chance.
A two-thirds chance in five years of competition.
Yeah, over 5 years they had the – yeah.
I can't even imagine a number like that. But do you see the stress that they're going through, and they're saying, like, you've got to fix this. You've got to make this safer for us. Otherwise, we're not coming back. And that's exactly what they did. They boycotted the race. What they did was this massive reconstruction effort where they smoothed out some of the bumps. They took some of the corners and made them a little less harsh than they were.
Mm-hmm.
I think the track was actually shortened at that point, just slightly. I mean, I've got the number here. It was shortened by like maybe 2.5 miles or something like that. So that's a significant chunk that came out of that. But, you know, really just making it safer. They added safety barriers that weren't there before. You know, of course, fewer corners, which was a big deal. And again, you know, they said, okay, the drivers decided that was okay, and they came back to race for the next couple of years.
Yes, and lest we do a disservice to Sir Stewart, let me give everybody a quotation here from Stewart himself about the Nürburgring. He said that – now, his last victory came at the Nürburgring.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And here's a quotation we found from him that blew my mind. Nothing gave me more satisfaction than to win at the Nürburgring, and yet I was always afraid. When I left home for the German Grand Prix, I always used to pause at the end of the driveway and take a long look back. I was never sure I'd come home again.
Man.
So just to show you how serious this was, you know.
Hmm.
But, of course, the story doesn't stop there. You want to fast forward?
Yeah, I do. You know what? One quick thing.
Yeah.
You know, he's Scottish, right?
Yeah, but I'm not going to do a Scottish accent. I feel like I would.
Scottish. Is he Scottish?
He is Scottish.
You
know,
hearing him call a race is fantastic. I just love hearing his voice. I believe he's Scottish. I don't know if I'm.
He's definitely Scottish.
Okay. Outstanding race announcer. I just love to hear him call a race. He gets so excited, so animated, and so just he's pumped for the moment. You know, it's just a fantastic race when you hear it called by Jackie Stewart. It's just, I love his voice.
Yeah, he's a legend.
Okay, now I've got that out.
Okay,
all right. So in 1976, there's there's the reigning world champion in Formula One is Niki Lauda, and he had the record on the Nordschleife. It was like under 7 minutes even at that point. We're talking like the late 1970s. So there was an accident that happened, and this kind of underlined the point that the drivers are trying to make, that, you know, he's in a car that's on fire at this point, far, far away from any kind of, you know, emergency personnel. They're trying to get to him, but, you know, it's such a great distance. You can't cover a 14-plus mile track effectively, you know, so tightly that, you know, you're gonna be able to get to every single spot within seconds.
Especially not at that time.
No, exactly. And so, you know, he actually was saved by fellow drivers that pulled him out of the burning wreck. Otherwise, he would not have made it out of this wreck.
Yeah, it almost killed him.
So, you know, this is a turning point when they said, you know, in 1976, in fact, was the last F1 race at the at what we call the ring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the traditional ring. There's still other competition that happened, but They eventually decided that, we can't run this thing here anymore. It's just getting too dangerous. Cars are too fast. We can't cover it with enough safety personnel. Mm-hmm. It's time to do something different. And that's when they built, later in 1983, they built, 1984, I should say, is when they built their current F1 circuit, which is not really, it's a ring, of course, but it's a much, much smaller ring.
Yes, it's a much smaller ring. However, the green hell remains today, and it's still considered one of the toughest and most dangerous. What's the qualification? Purposeful racetrack in the world?
Yeah, purpose-built racetrack, I guess. Yeah.
And so let's talk for a second about that, because we also want to make sure that anybody who does take our advice in this episode and does decide to visit the ring does so with a little bit of caution. There have been fatalities and serious injuries on this ring before, but that happens. I challenge you to find a major track of this caliber that has not had some sort of mishap.
Even a major roadway.
A major roadway. It's the nature of the beast.
It just happens, yeah.
Yeah, but
now, these go all the way back, Ben. They go back to 1928. Yeah. The first one was early in mid-1928, so it happened not long after it opened.
Yes.
And I would guess that speeds weren't exactly what they are now, but still dangerous. I mean, you're driving through basically what amounts to a forest.
Yeah, you're driving through a forest, and people are passing you, or you're passing someone.
Yeah. I mean, they were all out, no matter what. I mean, it's a race car, 1928. They were still going fast, don't get me wrong. I mean, speeds were high at that point. It's just they weren't, the 220 miles an hour that they are now.
Right.
And the latest one that's reported, Ben, reported, that's the key word.
Right.
2010, April of 2010.
Now, let's get a little – now, was that a fatality or an injury?
Fatality.
Now, let's get a little bit conspiratorial here, because the ring rumors, as they're called – have sometimes put a little bit of a haze or sketchiness over the fatality question, because there's been some talk, Scott.
You don't say.
Yeah, I do say. There's been some, or other people say that sometimes if someone receives a mortal injury on the racetrack, that it's counted as an injury. Even if they die en route to medical treatment. Now, of course, these sorts of accidents can be unavoidable. We're just letting you know that you will hear some ring enthusiasts claim that the fatality numbers are a little bit sketchy. But, of course, there is a tremendous amount of investment in safety technology and in training. As with any other public roadway, let us remember there's a public roadway. Other people's mistakes can be just as easily dangerous to your life as can your own.
You know what this reminds me of just a little bit?
What's that?
No one dies at Disney World.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you've heard this, right?
I mean, yeah, break it down, though.
I mean, I don't know where I heard this. It could be just an urban legend or a little rumor, but they will continue life resuscitating efforts until you're off Disney World property.
So that you are just injured.
Exactly. And I think maybe there's a little bit of that kind of thought process going on here, in that, they'll continue life resuscitating efforts on track property, take you off track, and then, oh, man, I didn't make it past the town of, whatever's next door.
Yeah, so this is something that we can consider this can happen. Now, one thing to keep in mind is there are a lot of motorcyclists on the ring. And as we know, motorcyclists can be much more vulnerable. So when you're on there, just stay alert, man. I hear one thing that people often say, especially people who drive on this regularly. There we go.
Got it.
That's tough for me, man. Mm-hmm. It's like my version of "you're rural."
And you did that fine.
Well, yeah, because it's not regularly. Anyway, but one thing that a lot of the pros say is that drivers should avoid timing themselves.
Yeah.
And that is because when you're racing against the clock on a closed race course and you're the only vehicle you have to worry about, then that's an entirely different ball game from what's going on here.
Yeah, but when you have to watch out for that minivan up ahead, or the Honda Civic that's behind you trying to, you know, make you go a little faster or whatever, or a motorcycle, you know, you don't see as you turn in, you know, you bank into a turn, and that happens. You know, this is the weird thing about this. If you look at, you know, you can find videos of this anywhere you want, because a lot of people love to tape themselves, you know, driving on the Nürburgring, of course.
Right, yeah.
And you'll see all types of vehicles out there. I mean, I even heard one mention of, like, tour buses that would take, you know, a trip across this. I've seen minivans wreck. You know, you can find a ton of crash footage online of, you know, just everyday vehicles really pushing themselves a little bit too far, whether it's machine or driver that's been pushed too far, I don't know.
A lot of those turns are blind.
Exactly, and, you know, the funny thing is, like, it's not funny, but when there's an accident that happens, they call the local police. It's not like track safety comes out and gets you. It's the
right.
It's the local police that come out. And I'll tell you this, you know, just a heads up for anybody who's wanting to do this. They will, the police are trained to look for timing devices in the vehicle, whether that's just a stopwatch, whether that's an actual, you know, a telemetry device, whatever it happens to be, they're watching for that type of thing. And it will be noted on the ticket that you receive. You know, for this accident, because you are going to receive a ticket because there's going to be damage to the course in some way. You're responsible for any damage you cause to those walls. You're responsible for, you know, maintaining control of your vehicle, of course, first of all. And they are trained to look for timing devices, cameras, that type of thing, and it's all noted on the ticket.
So we're just saying that when you do this, if it's your first visit, maybe don't take your Maserati.
Yeah, well, you know what, Ben? They say that, you know, like, you can expect, if you're a good driver, you may expect like a 10-minute time on this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Or even more. And this is, you know, there are places on this track, Ben, where there's still speed limits.
Yes, which a lot of people don't know. Now, I was reading about that too. Some people say they're not enforced.
Well, you know, I would not go against that at all. I would say that, you know, if it's posted, follow it, because
right.
Who knows how they're being recorded or if you'll have a ticket
posted
sent to you.
For a reason.
Exactly. I mean, we mentioned that rental car company that's got cameras that monitor and then send you a notice that you're banned for life from their company.
Right.
So you can understand that, you know, it's not that hard for them to just record your information,
mm-hmm.
get a quick photo of you behind the wheel, and send you a ticket. I don't know if that happens or not. But, you know, it's unusual that, you know, this is an open road for most of the time. They will close it down for, you know, testing if there's, like, manufacturers that rent the track for a certain
right.
amount of time. And that's where we see, like, the supercars come in.
And that's something a lot of car companies have a testing center on the premises.
Yeah, yeah. We've talked and we've blogged about this, and we've
mm-hmm.
got all kinds of information out there about, you know, this car is, you know, kind of involved in a time shootout with this car.
Yeah.
And they love to try to best each other. And what they do is they take a telemetry device. They've got, you know, so there's video of the driver. There's video of the course. There's video of where they are on the course, the speed, the braking.
Mm-hmm.
They record the types of tires used, whether it's a stock vehicle or if it's, you know, got some type of upgrades. You know, a lot of it's stock vehicle at this point, you know,
sure.
street tires.
Because this is huge for marketing.
Exactly. Because if they can claim they have the fastest time at the ring, which is what they call it, the
mm-hmm.
ring, that is, you know, that translates into sales for them.
Yeah, and that's also the difficulty is pretty well known. One thing that is interesting about this that some folks might not know is that the track has to be continually repaved.
Ah, yes. Yeah, there's resurfacing that happens all the time. And at one point, Ben, this thing was concrete.
Yeah,
And so that had to have been a difficult and loud and just a hard surface to drive on. And then I think there was a point where it was a mix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were parts that were concrete, parts that were paved
mm-hmm.
With asphalt. But now it's all asphalt, right?
Now it's all asphalt. However, the asphalt is not of uniform quality because there's a repavement schedule. So this means that you can be driving on one part that's just some fresh laid asphalt, and then you can run into some parts that are not nearly as new.
All of which makes this even more difficult, because if you don't know the surface exactly,
mm-hmm.
that's trouble.
But even more fun, I don't know if you ran into this, but one thing they recommend for first-timers on the ring is to spend some time, if you're a video game person, spend some time with some racing simulators.
You know, oddly enough, that's a good way to do this, because you believe it or not, you will familiarize yourself with the track via that game because it's accurate. That's one thing with, you know, these modern video games. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I sound like an old guy when I say modern video games, but honestly, it's a great representation. A lot of these are great representations of the actual course, and you can get a good feel for, you know, what's coming next. And if you get that, you know, burned into your memory,
mm-hmm.
then you know what's happening.
Yes. Now, also, there is a lot of tagging on the ring because various racing enthusiasts have put messages there. These messages might be as simple as something like, Scott was here, or they may be some sort of memorial for an accident.
You know, Ben, I saw this when I was – and I didn't know that, you know – they actually call it tagging on this thing. I didn't know what was going on because I was watching a video of a motorcycle as a motorcycle was taking the entire course, you know. And I got to the one section and I thought, what is that he's driving over? And it looked like almost like somebody had used like sidewalk chalk on the ground. But I guess it's paint. So people are painting the track with messages.
And
that's terribly distracting.
I think it's distracting too. We're on the same page there. We should talk. We can't in this show without talking about the future of the ring.
Yeah,
you've
I think
been
that's
reading
a good
about
idea.
This?
You know what? I do, before we,
yeah.
one more thing. Yeah. I do want to talk about the future, but let's leave that for the very last because, you know, we just talked about some of the supercars and the fast times.
Oh, we need to do the laps.
I think if we just mention this quickly because there's a couple of different ways that they break this down like any other race course.
Sure, there are categories.
Exactly. So they do like production, street legal vehicles. They do non-series, which are, you know, like non-road legal vehicles. Mm-hmm. And then they have competition vehicles, which that ended back in 1983. You know, because the 1984 course was then
built,
where they
yeah.
built the course. So,
and let's keep in mind that the benchmark here is maybe 10 minutes, right?
Oh, that's, you know, that's a good
person knowing the course.
That's a decent average citizen driving the course in probably a pretty quick car.
Okay,
so that's not an experience.
That's not
driver.
Tour bus time.
Exactly, and that's with other traffic on the course
sure.
and all the speed limits and everything. If you want to go for a production car, I mean, I'll just quickly go through this, but 6 minutes and 48 seconds in 2009 was the fastest time, and it was set by a car called the Radical SR8LM, and it's kind of a specialty-built vehicle, but
yeah.
It is a street-legal vehicle. They call it production, but I think it's kind of one you assemble yourself, you know, one of those deals, or they assemble it for you.
Okay.
I read a little bit about that, and it's a relatively small engine. It's a 2.8-liter V8.
Huh.
I think it had 455 horsepower, and it's based on two Hayabusa engines that are kind of melded together into one V8.
Wow, okay.
So,
and it's probably a lot of that speed is the driver, too.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, it looks like a purpose-built sports car.
Okay.
It's an open cockpit type of vehicle. It definitely looks like a race car. They're calling it a production car.
So it's technically a production
car.
Yeah,
and the next is the Gumpert Apollo with a 7 minutes and 11 seconds in 2009, and then a Viper ACR. With 7 minutes and 12 seconds. So that happened in 2011. Moving on to the non-road legal vehicles.
Here we go.
The Pagani Zonda R, which has 700 horsepower, Ben. again, this is not a street legal version of this. 6 minutes and 47 seconds. So it
wow.
bested the Radical by 1 second. And that was uh-huh. in 2010. And then a Ferrari 599 XX. Again, 740 horsepower, so another monster car.
Mm-hmm.
6 minutes and 58 seconds, so still under 7 minutes fast. And in competition cars, this is where the all-time fastest – you know what? I'm going to go with motorcycle first, and then I'll do competition.
Okay.
Motorcycles, I'll be honest, not as fast as I thought. Cars making around a little quicker.
I was surprised as well.
I just wrote down one. It's a Honda RC30, and this happened in 1993, Ben. It lapped it in 7 minutes and 49 seconds.
Is that still the reigning time?
I think that was.
I'm pretty sure.
I don't know why, but I mean, it just seems like the cars would be a little bit slower through this, but they're not. They seem to be faster. In fact, the fastest ever was a competition Porsche 956, and this goes all the way back to 1983, still the all-time fastest.
Yeah.
6 minutes and 25 seconds, that's lightning fast. We're talking about, was it 14 miles?
Yeah, that's grease lightning.
14 and a half miles. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, when you start looking at the times of these things,
mm-hmm.
It kind of depends on the year that it was raced there because the track was shortened in 1971. So pre-1971, you got a longer course.
Yep.
After 1971, you got a shorter course. So I tried to keep all of these are equal.
That's an excellent point.
The same distance. And then there's even the South Loop, which is shorter. And you know, there's all different ways to break this down.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
anyways, that's the fastest time. So 6:25 reigns supreme.
Unless you are the lucky person to beat it, right? And if you want to beat it, then you will be interested in one of the last pieces of news we have about the ring, which is that some people are trying to save it. There's a little bit of controversy now because starting in 2007, people began to build it into sort of a theme park.
Okay.
So it had the whole nine, man, a shopping mall, a roller coaster, and
sounds expensive.
Yeah, about to the tune of $350 million U.S.
Oh, boy.
And so, well, it's not as bad as it would be if it was 350 million euros, I guess.
Yeah, true.
But still, it's a lot of money. It's not chump change. And so there's a group called SaveTheRing.org, which has taken up this cause because there's something egalitarian about the ring, the idea that you can just go and pay and drive. That's so cool. That's kind of like being able to drive on the Indy 500.
It's similar.
It's
same.
Similar.
Yeah, it's same idea.
And just in case anybody is wondering, we did check. You cannot show up at the Indy 500 and drive for $30.
No, I don't think that's not possible.
You kind of have to know someone.
Exactly.
And this has become such an iconic thing in German culture, in racing culture across the world, that there are some folks who are concerned that the ring may be in financial trouble.
It's pushing bankruptcy.
Right.
And I think I think it's been rescued, though, recently, right? I think that, you know, it's been guaranteed some money from the German government.
Mm-hmm.
And enough just to keep it afloat. But you mentioned this group, you know, the Save the Ring group.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're really having a hard time raising some money to kind of make up the difference at this point.
Yeah, in July, the state-owned company that runs the circuit, they were declared bankrupt.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of a touch and go here. I got to tell you, Scott, I'm optimistic because I believe that the ring is important enough. Not just to racing, to history, mm-hmm. but mainly to racing, that the fans and the supporters and the drivers are not going to let it go to Butcher Dylan Thomas. They're not going to let it go gently into that good night.
Sure hope so.
Yeah. But
nice reference, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, hey, you got to get them in, right? So I guess that's what I've got about the ring, other than I really want to go, and I think everybody else should, too.
That was my next question. Would you drive it?
Absolutely. Are you kidding?
I totally would, too. This would be a blast.
Would I wreck it? Maybe.
Would I want to take my own car on it? I don't think so.
Oh, yeah, which goes back to Matt's strategy,
yeah.
Right?
I, you know what? I've got to think that there must be someone who rents cars there that knows that you're going to take them there and says, you know, it's okay. You know, we've got the added insurance. You're going to pay a premium for it,
right.
I guess. But I would think that somebody would do this.
You can go and learn more about the car rentals or car hiring, as they would call it, on the official website.
Okay.
Sounds good. And so we would like to hear from you about what you would drive on the ring. And if you've driven there before, you know, we definitely want to hear that. I didn't bring any listener mail today. Did you?
Or? Nope. Don't have anything, but you know, we did have, you know,
this was
a suggestion from
right.
Regina Oliver. And of course, Matt LeBlanc, he's always interested in it. He can't go there anymore in a rental car, but I'm sure he's still interested in it. But and I know there are other listeners that wanted us to talk about this. So
at the risk of offending the car rental company, worth it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Am I right? Sounds like a blast.
So we're going to head out. We will see you guys soon or hear from you soon, hopefully. Drop us a line on Facebook. Give us a holler on Twitter. Make it short, right, if it's on Twitter. And write to us directly if you'd like at
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.